We continued along a long corridor with a glass roof and through which a lush vegetation in which bright green with chocolate and yellowish hues predominated could be seen, until we reached a large room whose whiteness was cut by an infinity of fine threads that started from the walls. They must have been connected to some device, which was on the other side of the wall, and were distributed among rectangular tables that looked like marble, which were situated a foot or so from the floor, and on which rested some lifeless human bodies. As we got closer to them, I could see that they were dressed like peasants or shepherds. There were men and women and some boys and girls. Their faces reflected an unmistakable placidity. They were undoubtedly from Earth. They could be from Greece or from some province in the south of Yugoslavia, or Albania perhaps, from the south of Italy or Sicily, or from one of the colonies of people of Latin extraction who live in the Americas. Or Spanish, specifically from the south of Spain. I don't know what happened to me, so as not to suspect immediately that they could be my compatriots. Suddenly, as if I had seen them cooking in Pedro Botero's legendary cauldrons, I exclaimed, "They're not Spanish, are they?" "Yes, my dear friend, they are Spanish." I must admit that that was the worst moment I spent there, on the ship Light of the Cosmos, and I couldn't say the reason for my sudden and profound uneasiness. Afterwards I thought about it and I think that I didn't know how to control my reactions and a great shiver ran through my body. Seeing that swarm of wires stretched from the walls to different parts of the body of each of those Spaniards in cosmic rest, as they would soon tell me, and thinking that they were being used as guinea pigs was all one. Suddenly I had the sensation that all the wonderful sensations and fantastic impressions that I had accumulated since I perceived the indescribable sea of light that revealed their presence on that Catalan mountain had suddenly been erased from my mind. Luckily, the sweet voice of one of the women pulled me out of my tortuous thoughts. The woman, handing me one of the glasses and a pill, said to me, "Take this, it will calm you down." And after a brief silence he added, "We suppose you want to know under what conditions they were rescued. From certain death, just like the Hindus." For the first time no words came out of me. I nodded and slightly bowed my head. The truth is that I immediately felt ashamed, inside, of the distrust that had taken hold of me. I told myself, if they really read my thoughts, they will have said, "What a cretin we have as a guest." And to my great surprise, they informed me that those 24 sleeping people were part of a group of 6,500 Earthlings, the rest were in other nearby facilities from Western Andalusia and Lower Extremadura, who had been rescued, in the middle of the countryside, during the Civil War. And they told me more, they assured me that I had spoken of them in one of my books. According to what I was told, during our war their ships flew over Spain several times, and during one of their incursions into Iberian lands, one day, at nightfall, the crew of one of their spaceships perceived a large group of people who were preparing to spend the night near a river. But they also discovered that, on the other side of the river, a short distance away, African soldiers were camping, who were hunting for fugitives. To avoid that massacre, and at the same time to be able to continue their investigations into the adaptation of the people of Earth to life on other planets, the crew consulted with their space base and decided to rescue the 6,500 people who, with all certainty, were condemned to be barbarously sacrificed. And since then you have had them like this. Asleep. That's right. They have been in cosmic rest since we rescued them. But, according to the latest reports we have received, we can tell you that they will soon be brought back to active life. And do we already know which planet they will go to live on? Yes, of course. For the first time they will be members of the Yerbafina community, and then we will see if they can live in other places. That is the planet of the Hindus. The same one, yes. And what will they do? For the moment, nothing in particular. Initially, they'll have a period of adaptation, during which, to avoid accidents, they'll be subject to strict observation. During this phase they'll study and become familiar with our language and the different rhythms of life on the planet Yerbafina. Then, They'll decide what they want to do and will adapt to the work for which they show the greatest aptitude, through our training courses. But the most important thing, and they will be fully aware of this, is their contribution to the study of the adaptation of Earthlings to other planets in the cosmos. Do you understand? That means that they will also be able to devote themselves to research, to pilot ships and even to work as one of your computer coordinators. Naturally. Why wouldn't it be so? The memory of the rescue of the Andalusians and the Extremadurans would revive in me the endless monstrosities that I had heard about, precisely during my travels between 1975 and 1977, while I was collecting data and information for the aforementioned book of mine. And I also remembered that those events had already occurred almost half a century ago. My heart saddened, although without reason, really, because it was unquestionable that, if they had not intervened, those Moorish troops, as happened in so many other cases, would have put them all to the sword. I suppose it must have been fatigue that pushed me to see things, suddenly, from their saddest side. Or so it seemed to me. In the end, following my inveterate habit of downplaying everything, I let my imagination fly and imagined that one day, perhaps closer than some people think, a ship will arrive on Earth, manned by extraterrestrial Earthlings, to look for some guitars, some country suits and frilly dresses, castanets and a few cane chairs, to organize, in style, and never so accurate and precise a phrase, the first Canty Jondo del Cosmos Festival. And perhaps, who knows, that music could be the best bridge to establish, at last, the definitive contact between them and us. We found ourselves immersed once again in one of those long cosmic silences, the last of my stay among them. Perhaps that is why I had the impression that it reflected greater grandeur than any other. A silence that I may never know another like in my entire life. Like the previous ones, it did me a great deal of good. I thought that, despite everything, I, however much I tried, could not do more to try to mentally encompass all those situations that were unfolding before my eyes, let's say in their cosmic dimension. That is to say, in a dimension unknown to me and, I suppose, to any inhabitant of the Earth. So, despite the compliment that the extraterrestrials had given us, that some of us on Earth possessed cosmic fluid, it was evident that, even with that fluid, we could not free ourselves from our immeasurable limitations and contradictions. Please note that the message entrusted to me by the crew of the extraterrestrial spaceship Light of the Cosmos is dated August 31, 1981. Although the superpower is not named directly in it, and is accused of transporting highly destructive nuclear warheads and munitions through the cosmos, it was obvious to anyone moderately informed about international affairs that the power in question was the United States of America. To reach this conclusion, it is enough to recall the planning of innovations in the field of weapons. For almost 40 years, since the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it has always been the Americans who have set the pace for progress in warfare. And the Soviets' discovery of new weapons has sometimes come about as late as 7 or 8 years later. This, of course, concerns the known highly destructive means. Well, in less than half a year, with these two press reports, Diary 16 of Madrid, dated the 16th of November 1901, and La Vanguardia of Barcelona, dated the 5th of March 1982, the statements contained in the message of the members of the Harmonious Universal Brotherhood were fully confirmed, that the superpower that endangered the peace of the cosmos was the United States of America and that the other superpower, the Soviet Union, would not take long to react, thus contributing to the increase of the danger already indicated, without forgetting those threats that the planet Earth has already been facing for quite a few years. Final section. Later, already on the road that would take me to Barcelona, at the dawn of September 1, 1981, I told myself that trance, logically, had to alter me deeply and that, although they had prepared my mind to receive such a quantity of references, impressions and sensations, what they perhaps still ignored regarding us, the Earthlings, is that our organism, beyond the pure physical, vital, to better understand ourselves, continued to be conditioned by natural atavisms. These are easy to identify and therefore difficult to control or to annul. On the other hand, in many people on Earth, without excluding many of those who, in one way or another, contribute so much to ruining it, there is, more or less underlying, a longing, a desire, a yearning for improvement, for perfection, to progressively reach successive states of perfection. The serious thing is that the channels, the paths by which they often try to reach them, make them end up in goals opposite to those pursued or dreamed of. It is in this area that there is the longest road to travel if one day these foreseen extraterrestrial communities were to establish formal contact with the inhabitants of Earth. Man has been, and is, the main victim of his own and periodic contradictions. He has not known how to harmonize them, and even less, overcome them. And the fundamental thing, we return to the beginning of everything, has been not realizing, or pretending to ignore, that their incessant offerings to death have been silencing, in their daily reality, the immense repertoire of songs to life that many primitive tribes, alas, already possessed. Naturally, one of the first conditions for airing and healing would be to be capable of making our own balance sheet, personal and collective, honestly, without tricks, without subterfuges, with which through our coexistence, solidarity, fraternity, and companionship with our fellow men would inevitably spring forth, in order to prepare, together, our future. In this area, perhaps, more than in that of scientific and technological advances, the inhabitants of this harmonious cosmic order could lend us a helping hand. Because, as has been widely demonstrated, no progress is authentic if it is not balanced with a profound respect for the environment and a constant harmonious relationship between man's experiences and it. Personally, I believe that their help, that of the extraterrestrial communities, has already been very appreciable for the mere fact of having forced us to question our supremacy, as masters in so many arts. How far we are from that truly wise confession of Socrates, I only know that I know nothing, among which stands out the art of living. One is doubly grateful to them for having allowed one to see to what extent, throughout my life, I have been helped by what I always called out of the ordinary people, starting with my parents and continuing with my teachers and my friends, with whom I shared, intimately and amicably, bread and salt, in peace and in war, in exile and in Franco's prisons. And to those who, in some way, although the vast majority of them are no longer with us, I would like to continue showing my gratitude, striving to preach, by example, the generosity and loyalty, learned at their side, as the best launching pads towards them, towards the other inhabitants of the cosmos, hoping, as they ask us fraternally, to make peace and happiness reign on this planet called Earth. And that our spaceships, instead of nuclear warheads, carry sincere messages of peaceful cooperation. Well, I said, I think the time has come for us to part ways. I said these words after another long silence, during which I had been looking at those seven beings who, despite the intense and fantastic stretch of life spent among them, still seemed like strangers to me. They were all there, the three as always, sitting, and the others standing, behind their companions. What impressed me most in those moments was their gaze. The color of their eyes was not the same. Some were dark and others light, but as they shone with the same brilliance and gave off a strong magnetism, it was not easy to tell them apart. Through their eyes one could penetrate them and see them as if they were transparent. They were looks that seemed to come from very far away, from very deep, while at the same time one felt them very close, deep within oneself. Now I no longer had the slightest doubt, these beings were good people, in the broadest and deepest sense of the word. This sensation was not sudden, of course, but had been taking root progressively throughout the night. If you wish, you can continue asking us questions, without taking my eyes off them for a single moment, because I was afraid that I would probably never see them again, and I wanted to stamp their images strongly in my memory. I smiled and, as if my voice did not want to leave my chest, I murmured, I know, dear companions, that I leave hundreds or even thousands of questions unasked, and that I may never have the opportunity to ask you again. For example, the one who welcomed me when I boarded the ship, and who I don't know why I took for the leader of the expedition, interrupted me. You have not asked us the smallest technical detail about our ships, or the trips we make, or about there. Well, I've never gotten along very well with maths or sciences. And, after a very brief pause, I added, the thing is that I feel a bit tired. We understand perfectly. Then, as soon as I made a move to get up, they were already on their feet and, with their slow and harmonious walk, it seemed to me that I was attending the first steps of a ballet. They advanced towards the exit. Once there, in front of the ramp, they lined up, held hands and stood still, like statues, staring at me. As I passed by them, I also looked into their eyes one by one, and I'm sure that they realized that, with my gaze, I was thanking them from the depths of my being. I noticed that in their gazes, as never before, an immense, untranslatable kindness was reflected. It made such an impression on me that I was on the verge of turning around, sitting down again and continuing to chat with them until the end of my days. And if, at that very moment, they asked me to go with them, I would. Not so much to flee from this earth, so beautiful and hateful at the same time, but to get drunk as never before on wonderful discoveries, wandering through that universe of which, paradoxically, we are part and know so little of, at least the average person. And our children, unfortunately, perhaps less than anyone else. All of these were ideas, fleeting sensations, provoked by the imminence of our separation. That is why, when I reached the person who invited me into the ship, my last words were again tinged, despite myself, with sadness, will we see each other again? It is very possible. Annexed documents. Barcelona, I/9/1981. Dear Juan, Garcia Wishenza, from Madrid, I don't think it would be wise to tell you more things by letter. I am deeply moved by something that happened to me, in the middle of the Pyrenees, last night, when I was returning to Spain from France by road. I am typing up my impressions. I have the feeling that I have lived more in a few hours recent hours than in my almost 61 years of earthly life. And I think that I am going to end up with thousands of pages, which I will give you to read one day. Please, don't say anything to anyone until we meet. But, in the meantime, tell me what cosmic fluid and the drawing I am enclosing tell you. It is an emblem that was worn, about that size, by what I will always call the Knights of Space. It was something fantastic and I experienced an indescribable happiness, never experienced before and which I only believed I could feel if I knew one day that man had definitively defeated death and that life is dedicated to the infinite wonders that the universe contains. Thank you and a fraternal hug, Eduardo. Note, please, don't say a word to anyone. Letter from Juan Garcia Wishenza. Madrid, 19/9/1981. Dear Eduardo, your letter arrived today after several days of silence during which, by the way, I was also away, doing a little program with the people from television in Cantabria. Now, just arrived, your letter also arrives in which you tell me that you have returned to the place, that you have taken photos, for your memory, not for proof, and I gather that you are writing the message that was transmitted to you and that you do not want to delay its publication. Look, Eduardo, I have been trying to get a trip to Barcelona next week, but things have gotten tangled up with the magazine and I will have to stay here to sort them out. I am as eager to talk to you about all this that has happened to you as you are, or even more, if that's possible. But I think that, given the impossibility of coming right now, it is better to write to you to at least let me know a little of what occurred. I have all your last letters, and the drawings and the information, separated from the rest of the correspondence, because I think that at this moment you are a priority matter. A matter that occupies me even more than it worries me. because, in addition to being my friend, you are the first person close to me to whom something like this has happened, and I, who have known you for years now, have many more reasons to trust what you tell me than what anyone else tells me. Note, however, that I said trust. And don't take it the wrong way. Trust does not mean believing. But be careful, I'm going to clarify it for you immediately. It is not a question of not believing in yourself, but of not believing in the appearance of what has happened to you. In other words, you tell me and write what they want you to have seen, heard, felt and assimilated. I know that it is difficult to assimilate this, but I tell you with knowledge of the facts, because I have been seeing reports and speaking with people for a long time who, apparently, have experienced the same thing as you, with very few variations and with very often parallel results. It is very curious how the details, the circumstances, the ends, the means, and even the words constantly coincide. Reading your letters and hearing you on the phone was like reliving other experiences, other people's, of course, that I have already gone through before. But with the difference that, if with others I could allow myself the luxury of thinking of a simulation, in the last instance, with you I cannot think of it, because I know perfectly well what you are like and what you have always been like. It is the last thing you would have thought of inventing. Now I know, thanks to you, that what I have put in other cases for the benefit of inventory I have to recover, because it would be too much of a coincidence if others had invented, before you, what you have then really lived. That is why I am interested in asking you things, looking for more coincidences or finding some divergence, which always exists, even in the most apparently parallel cases. The questions will come, if it is relevant. And the time will also come when I tell you what I myself think all this apparent mishmash of things that have been happening to you means. I would like to give you some warnings, although they may seem obscure or convoluted to you now. First of all, that you continue not to tell anyone what happened, even though they are eager for you to tell them. And I recommend that you do so, because I think it is essential to have first assimilated the reason for the unreasonableness of all these things before rushing to proclaim them. When you told me that you were the first to tell them to, I calmed down. Now I am beginning to worry about the need you feel to proclaim the message. I am not telling you not to do it, but just to wait a little longer. Remember that things have come to you without eating or drinking, that now you have to assimilate them, and really assimilate them. Because it is not enough for you to believe that you have assimilated them. I know that it is tremendously difficult to listen to me in your immediate life circumstances. I know that you only feel the need to proclaim that you have been told that you must proclaim. And that what you have been told seems good, optimal, the best thing that could have happened to you in your entire life. Then you will say, why keep quiet about it? Our letter is not the most appropriate place to give you the reasons in detail, because it would be necessary, it is necessary, to sit down in front of each other and tell each other everything and ask each other everything and weigh up the pros and cons and weigh up each move, each word, each apparent meaning of things. But, as a clarification, I will give you an example. You tell me in one of the letters that, in the message, they talk to you about how the Americans are about to organize the end of the world and how, in a certain way, you have been chosen precisely because of your closeness to the people and your lifelong political ideas. I know that it is not exactly like that, but that is where things are going, right? Well, pay attention. I know of other cases, which I now know are as credible or as true as yours may be, in which they have proclaimed exactly the opposite, with the same or almost the same words, only turning the tables towards the more or less veiled proclamation of an authoritarian state that would put an end to the dangers of democracy and all that nonsense. Messages that, with almost the same words, turned the tables on fascism, in people who, when they received them, were of an ideology much more in line with that tendency than, logically, you could be. I even know of messages in which it has been recommended to publicly congratulate the Americans for their latest space victories. And in which the alleged knights of space, very similar to how you describe them, Even speaking with a musicality like the one you tell me have proclaimed the need to establish a new order that will once and for all put an end to the chaos to which freedom, libertinage, that man suffers can lead. I know very well, Eduardo, that you are not in a position now to understand what I mean, because you are logically influenced by a very strong shock that has put its importance before any possibility of calibrating things. Precisely for that reason I am not going to go into more details now that would only make you go against what I want to tell you with the best will in the world. I fully understand that a psychic trauma like the one you have suffered, no matter how much of a fabulous cosmic message it carries with it and no matter how much of an appearance of clarity and tranquility it has produced, leaves its mark. I mean, it traumatizes. It definitely influences our attitude, your attitude, to life. Anything I were to add to you would have to be like a shock to you that, logically, you would have to reject, since what is positive for you, what is important for you, what is fundamental for you at this moment is precisely what has come from there. So, for the moment, I will only tell you that what has happened to you is actually happening. That it is actually important. Very important, I should add. That it is also true. But, be careful. That certainty must be calibrated with all the calm, with all the serenity and with all the reserve, at all levels, that we are capable of. That is it. What I would like from you, serenity and reserve. Write everything that comes to mind, everything that they want you to write, spend all the time you need doing it. But think twice or, if you want, think twice with me before you rush to proclaim it to the four winds looking for a publisher. It doesn't work for me, although I understand it, what you say to me that you don't give a damn about anything else. You also say that you would like your management to be positive and that is important. Well, if you really want it to be, I ask you please to wait a little longer. We have to talk. We have a lot to talk about, Eduardo. To tell you now what I thought would be to tell you the plot of the book that Martínez Roca has just put me in the press to be published at the end of October, The Manipulated Man, I call it. And I talk in it about the manipulation that we are being subjected to from all sides and, of course, about that cosmic manipulation that comes from the alleged extraterrestrials who have already not only you, but many, many been almost deified as a source of goodness and solutions for the future of humanity. Would it be too much to ask you to continue telling me things, everything you feel like telling? I promise to be with you as soon as the magazine leaves me a little free. This is for a long and extensive chat. What does Antonina say? A big hug, friend. 1. Certificate from Dr. Joseph M. Riguantigilli. Psychiatrist, psychotherapy and psychosis. Social psychiatrist, family and adolescent psychotherapy. Barcelona, October 6, 1981. I declare that on September 1, 1981, at 4 in the afternoon, I was asked for a consultation by Mr. Eduardo Pons Prids, announcing to me that the subject in question was of the utmost importance. The consultation took place at 9 o'clock on the same day, telling me about a meeting he had had in the Catalan Pyrenees, not far from Prats de Molo, with the crew of a spaceship arriving from a distant galaxy. He also told me the contents of the conversations he had with some of the aforementioned crew members, who entrusted him with the transmission of a message for the inhabitants of the Earth. His accounts were coherent, logical and detailed, and one could see in the aforementioned gentleman a vital attitude consistent with a very special event and with the consequent emotional reaction, typical of a strong impact. According to the interview, the undersigned was the first person to have contact with the writer Pons Prids after the events, that is, after his contact with the extraterrestrials. After about 20 hours of the relationship described, the gentleman did not present any psychopathological symptoms or syndromes that could be classified as imaginary entities, in the universally accepted order. His attitude, behavior, self-psychic and holopsychic orientation, time-space and interpersonal relationship were normal in a situation of strong emotion. No sign suggested a pathological origin of his experiences. I indicated to him the possibility of a daytime impregnation of dream content, which he did not accept, reasoning it coherently. Direct Spanish witnesses. Unidentified flying objects, UFOs, constitute the greatest scientific and international problem of our time and, despite this, for more than 30 years it has not been taken seriously by official scientists. Why? What is hidden behind this silence? James E. McDonald, Dean of the Faculty of Physics at the University of Arizona, USA.